Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the podcast. I'm Genuinely Grace. I hope you're well. If it's your first time listening to the podcast, then welcome. Have a listen through to some of the archive ones so that you get a handle on the kind of stuff we do. It's all based around living your best life without the booze, basically. I say this because I know there's a couple of people just found out about the podcast recently. So that's great to have some new listeners. And welcome to everyone who's been listening since the beginning and everyone who's caught up and all of that stuff. You are so appreciated. I really appreciate you all so much. And I really appreciate those of you that are members of the Sober Club. I've just been thinking about it so much recently that having that kind of support network, you know, okay, I'm the kind of queen bee of it all, but I get just as much support as everyone else. And I think it's that support piece is just so, so critical. I did a yoga class and I was telling some of the guys in the Sober Club that in our yoga class, we were talking about flexibility. Not that I've ever had a lot of flexibility when it comes to yoga. I keep rocking up, but I'm not sure anything changes. But anyways, we were talking about flexibility and how, you know, what's the key to more flexibility, particularly as you get older. And we did this kind of yoga pose where we're all lying down in a circle. And then we kind of stretch one leg over. Sounds ridiculous, but if you do yoga, you'll know what I mean. But because we're in a circle, our leg kind of lies across the leg of the next person, if you see what I mean. So we were encouraged to support the leg of the person on our left, as it were, in the circle. And it was a really surprising exercise because it obviously when that happens, when someone gives you a little bit of support, you can definitely give a little bit more stretch, as it were. So there definitely is more flexibility when there's support. And so we came to that conclusion that, you know, in yoga, as in life, in order to have more flexibility, you need more support. And I just thought that was, it really explains so many things. And those of us that, well, certainly in the past, I used to try and do stuff on my own, try and control everything, try and be rigid about how I did everything. It's very, very difficult without support. When you've got support, when someone has literally got your back, then you can bend a bit more, you know, and to use that word in every sense, you can stretch a little bit out of your comfort zone. And yeah, it makes so much sense. So anyways, I'm feeling a lot of gratitude at the moment for that sense of support. We did a wonderful Sober by the Sea retreat day last week. It was just so great. And people left feeling just completely, well, changed, really literally changed by having that magic of connection. So it was great. We've got another one on June the 11th, if that resonates with you. It's very tiny event, hardly any spaces, but if that resonates with you, then have a look. Just go to thesoberclub.com and click on events, and we'll be putting more and more bits and pieces in over the summer, including a family constellations day, which I think will be Sunday, June the 17th. So register your interest if that's something that you'd like to be part of. There's also a Champneys retreat on June the 26th and 27th. That's in Hertfordshire as well. So if you really want that connection, then try and get involved. I fully appreciate you're all over the world listening to this podcast. So you know, I may never get to meet you, but it's great that we can be connected in this way as well. It's been a hell of a week emotionally, I think, for so many people. I don't know what's going on. I don't know whether there's something in the air. There probably is. I think a lot of people have been on an actual emotional roller coaster. We have a one-to-one accountability program running at the moment, and there are people in there that are kind of just hitting week four of sobriety, or perhaps halfway through that week four period if they joined a bit later. And there's so much of this feeling of kind of chaos and not quite sure how you feel, not quite sure what's going on, not even knowing who you are. It's so common in those early stages of sobriety. It really is. I remember back to just feeling just feeling raw, really, because, you know, before when we're drinking, you know, it doesn't matter what's going on, we just numb it with a drink. A first sign of discomfort, oh, drink will sort that out, you know. We never have to look at our emotions when we're drinking, and when we're not, when that's taken away from us, we have to actually face stuff, and it's hard to start with. But, you know, the good news is, as I've said so many times, you do become more resilient. It does get easier as time goes on, and you do eventually start to find that sense of balance. You know, you do get the joys and you get the crap days, right? I think it's really important to acknowledge that. It's life is not literally all unicorns and rainbows when you stop drinking. You still have some crap days. I mean, this week I've been, you know, I'm 4.5 years sober, and I still feel hugely emotional. I'm sure I'm more emotional than when I was drinking, and I was pretty emotional then. But, you know, I suppose it's that thing of having to feel all the feels, right? You don't have to, do you? When you're drinking, you don't have to feel all the feels. You can quickly push them down with drink. And when you're not, you have to be exposed to whatever's going on. And it's tough. You know, the tough stuff is tough because you have to look at it. And this week, I felt really, I'm sure everyone has actually, everyone's been impacted by stuff going on in the world. And even the celebby pieces kind of affect you. This week, I don't know if you saw the documentary with Will Young talking about his twin. Just heartbreaking. I mean, you know, with some moments of obviously amazing joy, but just actually heartbreaking what he must have been going through. And I remember back to when he was doing Strictly and everything. And I remember the kind of some of the mean stuff that was written across social media. Nobody knew what was going on. Nobody knows what's going on in other people's lives. It's just hideous to be judgmental about someone else when you've got no idea what it feels like to walk a mile in their shoes, right? So that really got me. And then the stuff with Bowel Babe, you will have seen that, of course, and the incredible amount of money that she's raised, and she was made a dame, and it's, oh my God, it's just this stuff, all of this stuff, you can just find yourself in floods of tears, even when it's not your thing. But I guess that's what it is to be human, right? We have to have the highs and the lows, and we do have to be able to feel some empathy and compassion. I'm convinced of that. My guest this week, I'm bringing such a lovely interview to you this week. You're going to love it. Susie Walker is someone I've known for a long time, but only recently knew that she ditched the booze. So cool. I'm just going to let her share her story because it's great. It's such a lovely story of positivity, and I come across these kinds of stories all the time. People who, because they stopped drinking, literally their life changed. They became brave. And I think you'll find Susie's story really, really empowering. My guest is the lovely Susie Walker, journalist and columnist. I haven't seen you for years, Susie. How are you?
Good, thank you. Really good.
Yeah, lovely to be able to chat to you. I've seen sort of bits and pieces over the years on social media and some of the magical things that you seem to be getting involved in. And then I read that you ditched the booze as well. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness. I mean, when I think about it, now that I think about some of the things that I've seen you do, as you call it, taking the big leaps. I mean, of course you ditched the booze, right? Of course you did. Because I think a lot of those things are, you know, not really possible when you're still drinking. But anyways, take us right back. Just tell us a little bit about you and the work you used to do. I don't know if you want to talk about the psychologist stuff you used to do.
Oh, but sure. Yeah.
Just give us a bit of history.
So, you know, I've been a journalist since my 20s, but I was very, very privileged to take over the helm at Psychologies magazine, which is a magazine about mental health and really kind of how to flourish in this world where it feels like anxiety. And I mean, we thought we were anxious before. That was before COVID. So Psychologies was this beautiful magazine, which was about supporting people, no matter what they're going through, to give people hope. You know, we interviewed so many brilliant people who, you know, had been to the darkness and then they'd bounced back. So I had a lovely 8-year editorship editorship there. And then recently, just last year, I decided to make the big leap, another big leap. And my son had gone to uni. And so I thought, right, I'm going to go off on my travels in a camper van. And I've been traveling in a camper van, and I've just settled. I've decided to settle up north, which is where I come from, in Northumberland, and continue doing my writing and things. I've tried to write a book. I'm trying to do these things. But all of this has happened. The kind of my creativity has exploded
since stopping drinking. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll dig into that in a moment. Can I just take you back a moment to the psychologist days? I mean, it's not that long ago or anything, but I just wonder whether you think that there is a massive increase in issues around mental health and anxiety, not necessarily due to COVID, but maybe BC, you know. Is it simply that we talk about it so much more than we would have done in, you know, say my mum's generation? You know, is there more of it, or do we just talk more about it?
Yeah, I just think we've been given permission to talk more about it. I really do. And now it's okay. We've been given permission to say, actually, I feel really anxious.
Yeah.
So which is wonderful. You know what I mean? It's come out of the place where we're ashamed.
Yes, absolutely.
Own it, and we can say, okay, and these are the tools to help you. And if you know, from being able to go to, I've had people in my family with bipolar.
Yeah, me too.
And with mental illness that is, that needs a lot of help and support and drugs. Do you know what I mean? Lithium is brilliant. And then, to the kind of more the people who we just feel anxious and worried, and we need help in managing that with more self-help.
Yeah.
You know, the whole spectrum. But it's wonderful that, people can talk about being bipolar now without being stigmatized.
And also
talk about, I'm feeling mildly anxious without being stigmatized.
Yeah. And it really is a massive change, but when you think about it, isn't it? Because I know when I was a kid, my mum had mental illness. And at the time, there was so much secrecy around it, and when I was old enough to sort of, at least grasp it, I don't know if I ever understood it, but I kind of grasped it a little bit. I most certainly wouldn't dare to tell anyone. It felt sort of shameful somehow. And then the other part of it that I remember really clearly is that it was very difficult, not necessarily for me, but as her daughter, but for other people to find compassion. Now, if someone's, ill, it doesn't matter what the illness is, and we can see the physical illness, we feel huge compassion. And, we want to be kind and send cards and grapes and flowers and goodness knows what. But when it's mental illness, everyone just stays away. Yeah. Thank goodness that's changed.
Yeah, it has. But can I just say, for you, I think having a mum with bipolar, I think that's really, really challenging. I think because it's a place where, it's often a fantasy for most of us, but the idea is a place where you get unconditional love, where you get that support, where you learn about your primary relationship. So for you, that's really hard. And as you say, when you're a kid, you don't understand it. Do you? You don't understand what that means, or what's odd, and the shame that's attached to that. And, a lot of the work that I'm a big fan of Brené Brown, that she's done around the shame. And she says it's the kind of the emotion with the kind of lowest vibration.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when we bring that into the light, when we start talking about that, I think it's incredible. So, you just talking about your mum having bipolar, I can't say who had it in my family because they haven't given me permission. But, the more we talk about that, then it's good, because other people can go, okay, it's all right for us to talk about it and not to be ashamed. It's not our fault. Okay to have struggled, and this is the way through, or this is my map, this is how I got through it.
Exactly. And then, as you say, there's the big stuff like that, and then there's the sort of little t traumas and the anxiety, and they're just not feeling so good. And again, I think people feel hugely guilty, particularly if you know, it would appear that on the surface they're meant to be okay and they're meant to have everything. You know, you hear women talk about postnatal depression, don't you? And that, and again, there's another huge layer of guilt because they've got a beautiful baby and everything's meant to be fine. And then what the hell is going on? Why aren't they okay? I mean, thank God we can talk about this stuff now. We probably couldn't have done that. I don't know. Certainly 20 years ago, it would have been tough, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think the more we talk about it, I mean, I think that the issue I find is, though, is not to become a victim of it and not to come from a victim state. It's like to understand, to acknowledge it and then go, OK, well, how can I not be in that victim that I'm looking to be rescued, or, you know, I'm trying to rescue other people? Or it's about how can we get on the kind of path to wellness for ourselves, whether we're supporting someone with a mental illness, because that can be really tough when you're supporting someone with that. And if you're living with them, there's no escape. So it's about how we can not be a victim in that as well, and how we can support those people. So I think there's a huge learning growth piece to be done, and not, because it's a kind of a very, it can feel very disempowering, you know, whether it's you that's anxious or you're living with someone with a mental illness. It's like, how do I get free of this? How do I live with it? And how do I, you know, live a good life?
Absolutely. And you know, we know that, I mean, I talk about it so much on the podcast, but the link between anxiety and mental health issues and alcohol, it's never discussed enough, that link. You know, the amount of people who are sort of rocking up to a GP with anxiety and mental health issues, then almost never asked about their drinking, you know, which frustrates me hugely. For you, when did you start to think, oh, hold on a minute, life might be a bit better without the booze?
I mean, on and off. I mean, you know, I would probably been drinking, you know, I interviewed the lady, Veronica Valley,
who was on my podcast.
She's great, you know, with Soberful, and we were sort of chatting about it, and we're saying that, you know, alcohol is not the problem. It's what you're trying to run
exactly
from.
Exactly what you're covering.
And I suppose, so my parents died when I was a teenager. So I think I've been running from all of that grief and trying to process that for a very long time, on and off, and finding ways to deal with that. But, you know, the fastest, quickest way to do that was a massive glass of wine.
Of course, yeah.
And
of course.
Brilliant. You know what I mean? The most brilliant thing ever was, you know, that stopped me feeling sad and lonely and devastated. And so I've managed my emotions with alcohol on and off for a long time. But, you know, I gave up when, you know, I was trying for babies. And then when I had children, I couldn't do drinking and children at the same time. And blah, blah, blah. But I think as I got older, it just became untenable to kind of drink. I was never very good at drinking. Do you know what I mean? One bottle of wine and I'd be throwing up. Whereas a lot of my friends, we grew up in that kind of era. You know, I'm 54 now, and we kind of grew up in the kind of Sex in the City era.
Yeah, totally. Women drinking. God, yeah.
I was getting kind of married with a bottle of whiskey in her hand. It was kind of these glory years of alcohol that in your 20s and your 30s you just about got away with. But as I went to my 40s, I was like, this is a bit sad. And then it just made me feel worse and ill. And then because I've been doing so much self-development, the therapy that I did helped me process the grief of losing my parents and all that. And I found a healthier way to deal with my emotions. That was the thing.
Fantastic.
And
but were you expecting to find so many benefits from not drinking?
You know, when you asked me to be on your podcast, I just sort of was thinking about giving up drinking. And I gave up on my 50th birthday. I said, that's it. I'm done. I'm done with drinking completely. I just don't want to have this conversation in my head of, well, I'm just going to have one and then have two and then four. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. So I decided to give up forever. So 2018, there have been so many changes in my life.
Yeah.
I moved onto a canal boat with my son. I went to a camper van. I left my job. I have started businesses. I've finished a book. There's been this explosion of creativity and change. And I think once you stop numbing yourself and your
emotions, exactly.
I make a commitment. I think it's I made a commitment to myself.
Yeah.
I think that's my story is because my mum died at 50, and I thought I thought, oh, it doesn't really matter because I'll be dead too at 50. So, and then all of a sudden I thought, oh, I'm 50. And I'm like, okay. So I kind of committed to myself and thought, wow, right. I am going to go and live my life now. I'm no longer living in the shadow of death. I'm going to embrace life. And there are so many, it's not just, yes, you feel better and your skin looks better and all of those things. I'm not sure I've lost any weight, which is such a shame.
Yeah, but it's coming back to who you really are, isn't it? That's the amazing part. It really is. And yeah. And I love that. I love the fact that, you know, all these amazing changes have happened for you. And just, I mean, I've found that it within the sober club in the community that I run, it never ceases to amaze me the incredible things people do. And you know, you mentioned your the camper van. One woman actually took all the money she'd saved not drinking and bought herself a camper van. And people just do amazing things. I love the way you call it an explosion of creativity, because that's what it is, isn't it? People, yeah. Lots of members say to me, oh, I don't think I am very creative, and I've got no idea how I'll fill my time. But yeah. Creativity can mean so many things, can't it? And yeah. As you say, isn't it amazing how it's kind of made you brave? It's that bravery that comes in.
I think what happens is you take away the kind of a layer of where you've been hiding, or there's nowhere to hide anymore. So all of a sudden you go, nope. Not tolerating this anymore, be it people or jobs or whatever it is, and you kind of get, as you say, really brave, and you, because you've got more focus, you've got more energy, you've got more I don't know, I think it's a commit, what I feel is like that commitment to yourself. This kind of love of yourself, like, no, I'm not gonna, you know, dull my light anymore.
Yeah.
I am going out there full beam. Yeah. But I must say, you know, I have had therapy, and you know, I've had a lot of help from a therapist on and off to help me become healthier around my emotions. I mean, you know, I tried giving up in my 20s without therapy, and that I kept going backwards and forwards. But I think, you know, the secret for me has been learning how to process in a healthy way.
Yeah, how to embrace the emotions.
My negative emotions, because it's like, I always, because I had that experience, I thought, I can't cope with this grief, so I'm going to run away from it. So I used to work very hard and drink very hard. And it was a way of managing incredibly negative emotions. And I said to the therapist often, this will destroy me.
Yeah.
It could have done. Do you know what I mean? It literally could have done.
Totally. I think it's a really good point you make, though, that, you know, it's not always as simplistic as just, in inverted commas, just stop drinking and then everything will be perfect. It's not that simplistic. You know, this is why in the sober club, we've got people who are sort of sober curious and thinking about it. People have been sober for 5-6 years, because there's always another layer to unwrap, isn't there? There's always the what's next piece. But the good news is, you know, we become much more resilient to deal with whatever we have to look at, you know, because often, I mean, people have often said to me, I'm nervous about ditching the booze because I know it's going to mean I'm going to have to look at X relationship or whatever. So they're literally putting off that, right? But the reality is that stuff will sort of pop up and bite you on the bum anyway. So better to deal with it from that place of sobriety, where you get so much more clarity and you feel so much more resilient. And I suppose authentic is the word, isn't it, really?
Aligned. I mean, I think the thing is when, if you're not doing the digging, if you're not doing the inner journey, I mean, sorry, it sounds a bit, being at psychologies for so long.
No, don't worry. We do lots of woo-woo stuff. It's perfectly fine.
Doing the kind of the inner work, which is, you know, looking, you know, being able to recognize emotion of like, I'm really annoyed I'm really sad, and becoming emotionally intelligent enough to recognize something. And then once you can recognize an emotion, it's telling, you know, I was very privileged to interview Julia Samuels, and she said to me, she's a very famous therapist, and she said, your emotions are messengers.
Yes.
Telling you something. So all of a sudden, you're in touch with your emotions. And yes, sometimes they're not good, but they're telling you something, like it's time to leave.
Yeah.
Or, you know, what about doing that? You know, it's not all negative. It's a good thing. So the combination of those two. But I think if you can, to get some support, I mean, even if you just did a buddy system, yep, of, you know, active, you know, if it, I mean, because therapy can be expensive and I understand that, but even if you had active buddies who did active listening with you, where you could just keep processing, or for me, journaling has been amazing.
Yeah, well, that's one thing we talk about an awful lot in the Sober, yeah, Club, and you know, sort of based on Julia Cameron's work of the morning pages. Is that what's worked for you over the years? Yeah, I mean, you, yeah, must have been writing about this stuff for years.
I mean, Julia Cameron, who wrote The Artist's Way, is a, you know, massive hero for me, and you know, I guess I always say that her book was the reason I divorced my first husband.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the pages are full of, yeah, you know, this kind of vomit on the page, and you can see all your emotions, and being able to, it's basically getting, what alcohol does, I think, is it is a break on your life, B-R-A-K-E. You're breaking yourself. You're trying to, but, and to have compassion for yourself, because it's there for a reason. You know, you're scared. But at the same time, when you take the breaks off, so doing something like the morning pages, like there's the 3 pages every morning, you're literally getting back into the flow of life.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then it's kind of, it can be, that's a really gentle way to get in.
It is. I know she calls it a form of meditation.
Yes.
And, you know, in the beginning, when I first stopped drinking, I mean, there was no way, certainly while I was drinking, there was no way I could think about meditation. I was very good at telling other people to do it and, you know, being a Hay House author and all of that stuff. But I didn't think it was right for me. Well, of course it goddamn well wasn't, because I couldn't sit with myself literally for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But it was a very gentle introduction to just allowing, you know, the stuff to come out that needed to come out with the morning pages. And I found it really fascinating in that, you know, there would be times when I'd literally be writing, I don't know what to write. I'd literally write that down. And then there were other times when I'd find that I would pause and the thought would be, I don't want to acknowledge that thought. So I didn't even want to write it down. And that's when you know it's really important, right? Because it'd probably be something I'd been hiding for years. And if I'd still been drinking and not been doing this exercise of committing to morning pages, then I would never have addressed it.
Yeah. I mean, just this morning, I had one of those moments where I don't want to write that.
Yeah.
But it's there. And like, it's a kind of ongoing work, isn't it? It's not like before alcohol and after alcohol. It's kind of, but it's getting back into the river of life, rather than, like, you know, with alcohol, it's like you're clinging onto a branch and you're kind of, you're safe from the current, but your hands are cold.
Yeah.
It's horrible. Yeah. And the pain, I think the thing is, isn't it, the pain of hanging on,
yes,
becomes more painful than just letting go.
Yeah, definitely. And so writing obviously has been a huge thing for you, you know, both when you were working with the mag and tell us about the books that you've written.
I've been writing a memoir about the year I spent on a canal boat with my teenage son in lockdown. Oh my god.
Great.
But what I found is that being creative is one of the best ways to kind of overcome any kind of problem, or, you know, whether it's morning pages. And so what I if anybody wants to join me, it's free. It's a Facebook group, but I am second draft into my book and I'm really, really struggling.
Oh, so bless
I'm
you.
Inviting everybody in. I'm like, come on, let's finish our books together. And the response has been huge. So,
oh, a lovely idea. What's that called then?
It's going to be How I Wrote My Book.
Lovely.
We're all going to do it. And I'm just going to have guides and we're going to have commitments. And because I've been a journalist, mm-hmm, I love deadlines and I love a team thing and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, writing a book on your own, oh my goodness, it's really,
well,
really
cool. Both writing it and then getting it out there, you know. Yeah. I mean, you know, like you, I've been a writer for years and I've written lots of books. But just a couple of years ago, I wrote my first, very, very first novel, right?
Well done.
And yes and no, but the truth of it is, it's sitting in a drawer. You know, metaphorically speaking, I haven't done anything with it. I had one. I worked with an agent for a little while, and there was a tiny bit of interest, and then there were like several rejections. My goodness, that's it. I completely went under. And you'd think that after all these years, I would kind of be bright enough to remember that J.K. Rowling had, what was it? I don't know, 60. Yeah, exactly. And Julia Cameron herself talks about how, I think it was it her novel or was it one of her books had 43 rejections, and on the 44th she got a commission. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
But I've not been brave enough. So yeah, there is the finishing it, and then there's the getting it out there as well, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean all of that, and having support around your creativity, and having a friendly group and everything. So that's what I'm but you know, I've left my big psychology job, which is I loved, but you know, now I've got some time for me, so I'm using my energy to do my book. But when you're left, you're like, so I need some help. So if anybody wants to join me, go to my website, susiewalker.com.
Yeah, I'll pop that in the notes.
My Facebook group.
That's fantastic. So that's wonderful. I mean, I love the whole idea of just encouraging people to write, whether it's just for yourself, you know, like the morning pages, or whether you're ever going to get something out there. It doesn't actually matter. It's just the process of writing creatively, I think, makes just a massive, massive difference, doesn't it? And I've seen so many people in the Sober Club actually go on to write stuff, amazing blogs, or one woman's just gone and done a MA in creative writing. Another woman who would never have considered herself creative in any way at all has just finished a whole year-long workshop in storytelling, which she's actually using for her business. So, you know, this amazing stuff happens. It's really true. Carry on.
The story is interesting. So, you know, the stories that we tell ourselves that keep us up. And getting the story on the page, I think the whole concept of story is looking at the stories and the beliefs that you believe about yourself.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of brings all my psychology stuff into it. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Really interesting subject.
Yeah. Great. How exciting. Well, I really look forward to seeing where that leads, and obviously seeing the book when it's finished. and what else, you know, what's going to be the next, you know, you use your phrase big leap. What's going to be the next big leap for you?
Well, there's been a lot of big leaps and recently. So I've just moved to Annick, which is this
beautiful. Oh my God. It's beautiful. Haven't you got that amazing bookshop train station thing?
Oh my God. Well, Barter Books.
Yeah, Barter Books.
Which is a secondhand bookstore. And weirdly, I've just been to see the lady, and we've decided this is big leap. We're going to create a book festival.
Oh, wow. Oh, please, 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 can I come? Please.
Yes.
I'll come and speak.
Why don't you come and talk? That'd be amazing.
Oh, I'd absolutely love to. Do you know, I've been wanting to go there for so long, and I haven't had enough of a good reason for an excuse to kind of come up. But well, definitely, I'd love to.
Mary Manley, who she's you know, in her 70s.
Oh, how fabulous.
Amazing, huge secondhand bookstore.
Yeah.
She's American, and I just completely fangirled. She's so amazing.
How great. Oh, wow. So that's exciting.
I mean, again, a celebration of stories and creativity and all of those things. That's where I want to put my energy now.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Fantastic. Well, it's so lovely to catch up with you, Susie. Yeah. It's really exciting, all the stuff that you're doing. It's great. And I'm so thrilled for you that you, like me, you know, you found that little missing piece of sobriety.
Yeah. Big Sober is brilliant. I mean, someone asked me about, did I have any regrets in my life recently? And I said, yeah, I wish I'd done it sooner. I made that leap.
Me too. I'm exactly the same. That's the only regret. If only I'd done it. If only someone had told me how amazing it is, you know, rather than just the message that everyone gives you all the time. Oh, well, you know, can you just have one? Like, no, what the hell? No. Why would I want to do that? Right. Yeah. Brilliant. I really appreciate it, Susie. I'll put those links in the show notes and look forward to seeing you for that book festival. Definitely.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. Brilliant.
Nothing like getting myself in on the gig, eh?
Fantastic. That's brilliant. That's absolutely fantastic.
Brilliant. Thank you, Susie. I really appreciate your time.
All right, darling. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Susie. So we'll put the links in the show notes and make sure you stay connected. And if writing is your thing, you know, don't forget about the power of morning pages, as we talked about. Julia Cameron's, I'm always talking about the artist's way. having a go at the morning pages, if it resonates with you, just start tomorrow. Just get a pen and paper or a nice notebook. It's important to do it by hand. It's good for the cognitive brain. And just do a brain dump. Just write a conscious stream of thought and just see what happens. It is amazing how when you let it all out onto paper, some kind of magic happens. It can be so powerful. You don't have to be, you know, a creative writer. You don't have to think, oh, I'm going to write a blog or I'm going to write a book. It's not about that. It's just allowing your thoughts to come out, because it's only when we do that that we realise just how many we've probably tried to suppress, you know, as I mentioned before. So to give it a try, it's something we talk about in the Sober Club a lot. Obviously, if you want connection and support, please check out the Sober Club if you haven't already. TheSoberClub.com is very low cost. It's a huge amount of support and inspiration, and you can dip in, dip out, whatever, however you choose. There is a huge member portal full of an online course. There's so many expert videos. There's everything in there. There are meditations, there's movement medicine, there's fitness stuff, there's tons on nutrition. It's everything really about living holistically, living your best life without the booze. And of course our private group as well. So do check it out if you haven't yet. Check out events if you're in the UK and you want to come to one of our events. And above all, stay connected. If you're doing this and you haven't told anyone, then tell me. You know, I don't always recommend that you necessarily spend a huge amount of time having debates and discussions with your partner or your family or your best friends, because they might not get it. They may not be going through what you are. But, you know, I've been through it. So you can tell me and I'll hold that vision for you. OK, I'll be your cheerleader. So if you're doing it, big hug. Go for it. Someone said to me the other day, oh, I really need it to be Sober October or Dry January, because otherwise, how will I make it work, you know, with social situations? Trust me, you can make it work. You're doing this for you, not for anyone else. So, you know, there's never a better time to start than literally right now. I'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.